At her brother Ted's funeral, 14-year-old Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn was told by a sympathetic mourner, "You'll have to be very good now. Your parents are going through a lot." It would be more than a decade before DeVita Rayburn could begin to acknowledge that she, too, was going through a lot. Surviving siblings are often engulfed with guilt and with the feeling that their loss is somehow less than the loss felt by their parents or by the children or spouses of their siblings. Sibling loss is a subject that's often overlooked by academics as well. In a new book called The Empty Room, Surviving the Loss of a Sister or Brother at Any Age, Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn writes that experts tend to come to this topic because they're survivors themselves. More than a quarter of us are estimated to suffer sibling loss in our lives, and many people weather this loss without the usual social rituals of bereavement, without much support, and without recognition that it was their loss, too. Later in the program, why the federal government is telling hospitals to identify illegal aliens in their emergency rooms and what hospitals are going to do about it. But first, the empty room. If you've lost a brother or a sister, we want to hear from you. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn joins us now from our bureau in New York, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
I was struck by, I guess it's more than 10 years after your brother died, and well, you'd had bouts with alcohol and drugs, with various eating disorders. You were at sixes and sevens, I think it's fair to say. You finally go to a therapist, and much to your own surprise, the first thing you say to her is, "I am my brother's death."
Right. I think at that point, my identity had been so wrapped around my brother. I mean, I'd been his younger sister before he got sick. When he got sick, I became the sick boy's sister, and in the press, the Bubba Boy's sister. And after his death, I was so unable to mourn that my whole life became wrapped around this single traumatic event in my life, and I had been unable to go beyond it. And I don't think I was really even aware of it until I sat down that day and said that.
As you mentioned, your brother's was a famous case. You were written up in magazines. There's been, I guess, any number of television programs, I guess, based on your brother's case of aplastic anemia, living in the bubble. Was it peculiar to his illness, do you think, or when did you begin to generalize this feeling that you had?
The first time that I talked to someone else who'd lost a sibling, it was when I was talking to a woman who ran a science writing program. And she was a science writer herself and actually had covered my brother at one point in her career. And she mentioned the fact to me that she, too, had lost a brother. He'd been about the same age. And it was shocking to me that the diseases were so different, and yet there were so many similarities in our story. And I entered her program that was at Johns Hopkins University, and my thesis for that program was based on sibling loss, and she encouraged me to go out and interview other siblings, and I interviewed three people who lost siblings in childhood, and it was stunning how similar the themes were.
Well, tell us about some of the similarities that you experienced. What were those themes?
I think what was stunning at first talking to people who'd lost in childhood was just how overlooked the loss had been, how in the family context the lost sibling was never talked about, pictures were put away, there was a sense of mourning that pervaded the households, parents became preoccupied with the loss and never really came back after that, and the sense of longing for this lost sibling that they could never acknowledge.
You tell a fascinating story in the book about the sister of perhaps one of the most famous lost children ever, and that's Charles Lindbergh Jr.
Right, Reeve Lindbergh. That was an amazing story. She wrote a memoir a couple years back called Under a Wing that I picked up, and it was amazing because I don't think she even quite realized how much she had been unable to claim that loss as her own. And their whole lives had been structured around this loss, and but the surviving children hadn't been unaware of it. They'd all come after this lost child. The parents had been very frightened about what had happened. They moved to a very secluded home in Connecticut. They were removed from the street and from the water. They lived on the water so that no one could see them. It was a very secluded existence. The family never spoke about the loss, and yet there was this awareness of this lost sibling that was and was not theirs to claim.
Almost a ghostly presence.
Absolutely.
And then there's the experience when Reeve Lindbergh herself, one of her babies dies, not as the result of a kidnapping and murder, but as the result of an illness, and mm-hmm. there's a touching moment with her mother.
Right. It was obviously a very distressing event. It happened at her mother's house, and she went to pick up her child in the morning, and the child was dead. And they called the ambulance, and she was distraught, and her mother insisted that they go and sit by the crib, and she didn't want to. She said, "I wanted to run screaming from the room," but her mother insisted, and so they sat down there, and her mother said as they sat there, "I never got to sit with my own baby this way." And she realized at this moment that they were sitting not with one dead baby, but with two, and she was proud to be able to give her mother that moment, and it was the first time that she'd been able to be part of that earlier story and be part of her brother's death as well and own him and his story.
We want to hear your stories of what's happened when your brother or sister passed away at whatever age. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn. She's the author of The Empty Room, Surviving the Loss of a Brother or Sister at Any Age. And let's take a phone call from Rosemary, who's on the line from rural Oklahoma.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, my story is that my sister died before I was born, and I would actually not have been born had she not died, because my parents were in their 40s when they conceived me, and I was born just before the anniversary of her death. I was named Rosemary for remembrance, both for my deceased sister and because my parents conceived me the night that they learned about the bombing of Hiroshima and the enormous loss of life at that time. They'd pretty much given up on having another child, but they tried that night, and along I came. And it was a very strange situation the entire time I was growing up, because my sister was blonde, blue-eyed, and paralyzed from the neck down from birth. She was what's called a Taylor breech presentation. So in essence, she was born in the lotus position, and this was during World War II. There were not adequate antibiotics, and she died. And so I've always mourned her loss. I ended up memorializing her because at one point in my life, I took her identity and went into white supremacist compounds. Being of mixed blood, but able to pass for white, I wanted to find out as much as I could about Christian identity and other American religious terrorists. And I found that way of memorializing my sister. She was named for my abolitionist great-grandmother, our abolitionist great-grandmother. So, you know, by taking that name, I was both honoring that great-grandmother and my deceased sister.
Well, Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn, you write in the book, and it almost seems counterintuitive that children born after their sibling's death, yet they experience some of the very same problems as if their sibling had been alive when they died.
Absolutely, because that earlier child is part of the family structure. They were there. The parents had two children. They remember that child. They mourn that child. The whole family is informed by that experience. And yet often the children who come after, it's presumed that they're not going to be affected, and it's never discussed with them, and they're not made part of that story. And so there's, again, this sense that it's not their story and not their loss to mourn, and yet it is very much part of their life. So it's a confusing situation for a lot of people.
I would like to interject and say that my parents did handle that very differently. They mm-hmm. they made sure that I knew about Sarah Catherine. In fact, mm-hmm. when I was about 5 years old, I remember stomping my foot and going in my room and shoving a dresser in front of the door, and I said, "I can't compete with her. All she ever did was smile." And they knocked on the door and were very respectful and said, "Yes, but you smile and you'll do so much more than smile." Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. they did always acknowledge that while, you know, they explain that it's, in their mind, the most terrible loss that a person can suffer because it's against what we think of as the natural order of things.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, they very much made me a part of the process of knowing her, and I've always thought mm-hmm. of her as my guardian angel.
Well, mm-hmm. Rosemary, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. Let's go on now and talk with Matt, and Matt's calling from Palo Alto, California.
Oh, thank you very much. My experience is that I lost an older brother when I was 19, and I watched the trauma that my mother went through, and I found that I was whitewashing sort of my own young adulthood somewhat so that I wouldn't have to introduce any sort of element of fear or the basic ups and downs of my life into hers, because I didn't want her to see that. And I was wondering if that's something that came up with siblings.
Oh, yeah, it's really common. I mean, I think the children, the surviving children, whether they're actual children at the time or adults, really try and protect their parents from any further pain. And in young children, it often takes the form of just not mentioning the lost child. And in teenagers and older, you know, adult children, I think it takes more the form you're talking about, of trying to shield them from any further pain and protect them from the real story of what your life is like. And of course, that's difficult for you because you're leading somewhat of a dual existence and not being exactly who you are. But
yeah,
in a way, that's part of your story, isn't it, Elizabeth?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was... When my brother was sick, I was the good child, or I tried to be. I tried to be invisible and perfect and to never need anything. And I think during adolescence, too, it was difficult because you're going through the normal adolescent things, but those things are very frightening to parents who've already lost one child. And so I took a sort of subterranean approach, which was to rebel in all the usual ways, but to make sure they never, ever found out. But it was hard.
That's my experience, and also led to substance issues as well.
Yeah.
And you also say eating disorders are common, Elizabeth.
Anecdotally, yes, they seem to be common, and I really think that's about control, because as a sibling in that situation, you have so little control, and so here's one small segment of your life that you can get a handle on.
Matt, so. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's talk now with Kelly. Kelly's calling from Oklahoma City.
Hello.
Hi.
Boy, I was riveted when I got in my car and heard the subject matter on your show today. I was one when my brother drowned, and we were all present with our grandparents at a lake. And I always knew that how he had died, but going through childhood with such a profound sadness in my family, mm-hmm. and everyone seemed to be involved in this unknowing thing that had happened that I really wasn't part of. I was such a young child, And later, going through therapy, I realized, wow, it would actually have been better for the family or for myself, and if I had actually been able to be part of the loss,
mm-hmm.
Instead of just being kind of an outsider in my own family.
Right.
And it was just, you know, I was always sheltered and always mm-hmm. overly protected, but yet didn't really quite understand it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And had an older brother. They were the same age when my other brother died, and just not understanding the dynamics of how it affected everyone, because, you know, basically I didn't have that loss as an experience as well as they had.
Well, I'm very young at the time.
Right. But going through counseling later in my life, I thought, wow, if I had been allowed into that sadness in some way, I don't know how they would have done that. I would have understood all the problems. Mm-hmm. My parents were divorced after 38 years of dealing with it. You know, it would have mm-hmm. given me a lot more insight
right.
to what they were going through.
And you write that divorce is not an uncommon development either after the loss of a child.
Right. It's families have such, or couples end up with such different coping styles. I think it's very hard to come together after such a tragedy. And find a way to go on.
Kelly, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking about sibling loss, the death of a brother or sister. We're taking your calls, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn, the author of The Empty Room. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about what it's like to lose a brother or sister and why so many times that loss is not acknowledged. If you've ever experienced this, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest, Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn, the author of The Empty Room, Surviving the Loss of a Brother or Sister at Any Age. And let's take a call now from Carlina, who's on the phone from Saratoga, California.
Oh, hi.
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 Thanks. The timeliness of this, my 8-year-old died 5 weeks ago tomorrow.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I'm trying to help my 10-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I suddenly realized in the whirlwind of getting through this was, and you know, doing the memorial service and all this, was that Adrian was sort of stuck out in Never Never Land.
Mm-hmm.
And now we took him immediately to the Center for Living with Dying, which has support groups for people in various stages of loss. But he couldn't find anyone who'd experienced a loss quite like his.
Mm-hmm.
There were no boys who'd lost brothers. There was one 7-year-old girl who'd lost a sister.
Mm-hmm.
But no one that he could identify with.
Yeah.
And I went to bookstores looking for books to help him and found nothing on the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people don't want to think about children dying and what siblings go through.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you have some references for those of us who are going through this.
I do have a list of resources in the back of the book. There's one place in Oregon called the Dougie Center that specializes in children's grief and has focused a lot on sibling loss. And they have, there are a number of centers across the nation that have modeled themselves along the Dougie Center programs. And so they might be able to hook you up with some place, because they do like to match by experience and by gender, so that people do have a reference point for their own experience. So that might be one thing.
Carlina, you said your daughter's 10 years old?
No, my son.
Your son was 10 years. How old is your daughter?
Two boys.
Two boys, I'm sorry.
I had Andrew, who was 8, and Adrian, who is 10.
Mm-hmm. How do children, Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn, of that age generally, do they understand death as permanent?
By 8 to 10, they're getting more into understanding it as permanent, but it's confusing. And I think one of the most important things you can do for your son is talk to him about what happened in an age-appropriate way, but also as the years go by, update him and let him know what happened so that he can keep processing what happened at the right developmental age. What needs to happen is that they need the information to go through this and grow up with this. A lot of times what happens is that the kids don't get any information or get meager information, and so they grow up. And the most common thing I hear from adults who lost siblings in childhood is, to this day, I don't know what happened. So
Adrian knows very well what happened.
So that's
because we've always talked. Well, we're lucky we're a family who talks. But I have found that in this, he's not talking much at all.
Yeah.
And he doesn't seem to want to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband and I are being careful not to push, but to give him opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I'm feeling like we're in this whirlwind, and I feel like I'm feeling my way blind.
Yeah.
And I was really disappointed at the lack of resources for siblings.
Yeah, there's not that much. There's more for children than there are for adults. But Adrian was interested in going to the groups.
Yes,
he was open to that.
We took him. Andrew died on a Thursday. We took him the following Tuesday, and they actually decided that the group wasn't working for him, and he's been working with a one-on-one counselor. He has stated several times that he'd like to find someone who he could identify with who's been through this.
Right.
But when I told him about a father we know who did lose a brother when he was a boy, and Adrian said he wasn't really comfortable talking about it, and I just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he wants to talk to another boy who's been through this.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's often hard to find.
Yeah.
Right.
And I have no idea how this is going to go out, how it's going to proceed, and I feel often like I have no resources.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will try the Dougie Center. That sounds like a great idea.
They're a wonderful place.
And I think probably Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn would echo the point. The most important thing for your son to know and for you to know is you're not alone.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I understand the importance of not feeling alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And but he, finding someone who's been through this, who he can talk to, has been a struggle.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, but we're going to keep trying.
Good luck, Carlina.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks very much for the phone call. Joining us now is author Allison Smith. Her memoir, Name All the Animals, recounts her family's journey through the 3 years following her 18-year-old brother's death. She also is with us from our bureau in New York, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You were just 15 when your brother was killed in a car accident.
Yes, that's right.
And I wonder, as you've listened to some of these experiences, and particularly Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn's, again, her brother had this long illness, any better or worse when it's a sudden death?
I wouldn't say better or worse. I don't think there's any hierarchy. I do think it's slightly different. I mean, what siblings have to deal with when they have a sick brother or sister is being the perfect child, as Elizabeth said, or being the very good child and dealing with parents' years sometimes of preoccupation with the sick or dying child. I think with sudden loss, children are sort of thrust into an unreality. It's just so hard to understand that this person is really not coming back, because my brother, you know, he went to work one morning, ran off in a rainstorm, jumped in the car, and never came back. But it was like every other day. So I just waited and waited at the end of every day thinking, well, I'm sure he's going to come back one of these days.
I wonder, when you decided to write about this, were you writing his story or were you writing yours?
I was writing everybody's story but my own in the beginning. I wanted to write about my brother because I didn't like living in a world where nobody got to meet him anymore. So I started to write little stories about him, and then I decided to write about the loss. And I thought I would write about my parents' lives and everything they lost when Roy died. I thought that was sort of the authentic family experience. In fact, my first draft was 800 pages long, and I rarely appeared in it. It just didn't occur to me that the sister's story was an authentic story to tell.
It's interesting. You describe a moment, or I guess several moments, where you would liked talking to what you describe as the before people. These were people who knew your brother but didn't yet know that he was dead.
Yes, and I do think that's a sort of child-adolescent way of looking at things. I divided the world into people who, which is most of the world, who had heard about this terrible tragedy and would approach me in a completely different way with these ideas of how I needed to take care of my parents. And it's uncomfortable for a kid to be approached by adults who are trying to deal with you because your family is in a tragedy. And then every once in a while you'd run into somebody who would say, how's Roy? Is he on his way to college? And it was so exciting. It was like Roy was still alive inside that person's head. And, you know, as an adolescent, I became very interested in finding as many of those people as possible.
I wanted to ask you a question about survivor guilt. This is something I guess we've become a little bit more accustomed to, but not necessarily in this context. And I wanted to bring Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn back into the conversation on this point as well. But Allison, why don't you go first?
Well, survivor guilt happens, I think, very often to siblings because, well, the one thing we really do talk about with siblings is rivalry, how we're in competition of, like, who got the last Coke and who got, you know, the better bicycle. And then this person dies, and in a terribly tragic way, you feel like you won a sick competition. And at that point, you would do anything to share life with them. You'd like to split it in half and give them half. And I think it's very hard for younger siblings sometimes to reach the age at which the older sibling died, because you think, you know, in my case, when I reached 18, I thought, I'm going to surpass my big brother, and this is not the natural way things should go.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Let's bring in an email now from Edward White in Jacksonville, Florida. As someone who works at a Ronald McDonald House, I routinely encounter terminally ill children. On those occasions when a child does pass away, adult health care providers and staff members do all they can to comfort the parents, but I often see that siblings aren't always attended to in the same manner. What are some approaches that can be used when dealing with siblings who have lost a brother or sister?
I think, as Elizabeth was saying, you need to make sure they know what's going on in an age-appropriate way. I would never, take the kid away to the hospital and say they've gone away on a trip or something. They should feel involved. They should feel an equal part of the family. And I do think parents don't need to express everything about their grief, but I do think they need to share how the family is experiencing this together. It's mm-hmm. not the parents on one team and the kids on another team, mm-hmm. and the parents have a bigger problem and a bigger grief, and the kids should really, you just wait in line till your parents are done and then we'll maybe deal with some of your issues. I mean, make them feel included in the process. There's a way for them to be involved in every part of it that's still appropriate for their age and their understanding.
Yeah, I think it's also important to acknowledge for surviving siblings that their relationship was unique and special, yes. and just as important in a very different way than a parent's relationship to a child. And I think the sibling relationship has so long been stereotyped as one as rivalry that we often just don't even see how unique it is. And so to help a sibling understand that it was unique in the ways that it was unique and allow them to talk about could really help them. And I think also making them part of the mourning process, making them part of the funeral process. I heard from a lot of people who, as children, were not allowed to wear black at the funeral and felt like they weren't real mourners. Children who wanted to be able to visit a grave site for their sibling, but the child who had died was cremated, and so there was nothing like that for them to do. And so they were very much left out of the process, and as well as made to feel like their loss was not as big. So I think to include them and to acknowledge their relationship would be important.
And if it's not addressed, you write that children are somewhat, depending on what age they are, but there's this sort of magical age where you think, oh, that time and I wished my sister ill, I thought, mm-hmm. it's my
yes.
fault. I did
right.
it.
Right, right. I actually thought that myself. I can remember when my brother got sick, I was 6 years old and we were driving to the hospital and it suddenly occurred to me why it had happened. And it happened because I'd gotten angry at my brother and I'd wished something bad would happen to him, and here it had happened. And I never remember, thinking, oh, that's silly. I think it just sort of ebbed away into the back of my consciousness. And still to this day, I have, dreams where I've accidentally killed somebody. And I think I still carry that guilt and that fear.
Hmm. What age, does that ever go away?
I don't know. It's still there for me. So.
Yeah. Our guests are Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn. She's the author of The Empty Room, Surviving the Loss of a Brother or Sister at Any Age. And we're also speaking with Allison Smith, the author of the memoir Name All the Animals. Both of them are with us from our bureau in New York. We're talking about the loss of a sibling. If you'd like to join the conversation, our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email. The address to reach us is TOTN@npr.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's hear now from Ellery. Ellery joins us on the line from San Francisco.
Hi. When I was in my early 30s and my brother was in his early 30s, he died suddenly. And we were going through a period where we weren't getting along. And I felt my loss was totally minimized because of that. Mm-hmm. And my parents said, "You don't understand. You're not a parent." And I felt a tremendous sense of loss.
Right.
And the other thing that I haven't heard anybody talk about really is I compared myself to him, not that he was, he was one way and I was the other way. And my whole life I compared myself to him as he did to me. And I felt that I was lost when he wasn't there. Who was I? Because I was always in relation to him.
Right. I have a section on this in the book because I think that's such a profound issue in losing a sibling, is how much our identities are bound up in one another in ways that we don't realize, so that when there is a loss, there is a sense of identity crisis. Who am I now? Who was I before? And who am I now that they're gone? And we're so shaped in response to them. We're echoes of them. Talk about the family jock and the family athlete. We find different niches in the family. And so it's very disorienting when you lose a sibling to figure out how to be after that. And you're absolutely right. And for me, what really helped me was really just sitting down and writing out the story of our lives together and what we had been like as children together, and then what was it like now? What was I missing? And that really helped me to try and elucidate, like, what had I lost? And the other thing I would tell you is one thing a lot of adults say is that they feel like they had a double loss because they feel like they lost their sibling from childhood, and they lost the chance to reconnect, because a lot of siblings go through times of space and disconnection in adulthood. And so there is this sort of double grief that you're talking about.
I'm sorry, Ellery, go ahead.
I totally relate to that. I mean, I feel such a sense of loss about I can't reconnect with him now.
Right.
And looking back at it. And I guess I also feel loss of my parents, you know, that, that a part of them died when he died, and that didn't seem quite fair to me. I wanted that part back.
Right. Yeah.
Ellery, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. A lot of us, well, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, don't always get along with our siblings, particularly as adults. In that case, I guess the sense of the loss of that ability to reconnect, that's still there.
Right. Right. And I think there, you know, I didn't hear from a lot of people who'd had difficult relationships with their siblings. And sometimes I would hear and then they would disappear and they didn't really want to tell their stories. And I think there was a lot of shame associated with it. But there's no shame. This is the rhythm of what happens in life. And I think that those people often don't feel entitled to their loss, but I think they're just as affected. I mean, I haven't heard from them as much as I would like to, but you know, your identity is just as shaped by someone who you're at odds with as someone who you're in sync with, and so there's still a profound loss and some confusing issues going on there. So they shouldn't invalidate their own loss. It's a true loss.
Allison Smith, I wanted to ask you, you said that whenever somebody tells you that they've read their book, your book rather, they almost always point out that they bought a copy for their mothers too.
Yes, this has been surprising to me, but it's been a lovely surprise. It seems that the book, if it affects someone, they want to share it with a parent. And this is very moving for me because in some ways I feel that they're sharing it with their parent to say, hey, here's another way you could look at what the lives of your children are like. Here's something nobody ever told you about, which is the isolation of adolescence and what, and sort of what it's like to be inside this family as a sibling instead of a parent. And I've heard from a lot of mothers who are really engaged with the book and moved by it. I think because it helped them sort of develop an understanding and vocabulary for seeing their kids and their kids in relation to each other.
Allison Smith's book is Name All the Animals. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Allison Smith was with us from our bureau in New York. When we come back from a short break, we'll continue our conversation with Elizabeth DeBita Rayburn. She's the author of The Empty Room, Surviving the Loss of a Brother or Sister. And we'll also talk about hospitals who are being told to identify the immigration status of undocumented patients if they want federal funds to pay for emergency care. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the loss of siblings. Our guest is Elizabeth DeBita Rayburn. She's the author of The Empty Room, Surviving the Loss of a Brother or Sister at Any Age. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, or you can send us email, totn@npr.org. And Elizabeth DeBita Rayburn is with us from our bureau in New York. Let's get another caller on the line. Donald is on the line with us from New York City.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for another wonderful, high-quality program.
Thank you.
Comment that I wanted to make and wanted to have your guests maybe make some comments on is I went through this very similar situation. I lost a brother in an auto accident 24 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I noticed at the time that there seemed to be more attention as far as siblings focused on my sister who came between the brother who died and me than there was focused on my younger brother or on myself. And I was curious to know if your guest had had an experience with sibling rivalry or other similar family issues coming up to the surface after after a death like that, and the kind of effect that might have on a family.
I'm trying to think why that might have happened. Maybe they would have presumed that that sister was closer to your brother because they were closer in age.
I think that was part of it, yes. But mm-hmm. I see that you know, his death has had a real caused a real change in the family dynamic, and
yeah.
And I've noticed that even more now that both of my parents are deceased as well.
Yeah, in what way did it change?
It seems like my sister has been looked upon as the spokesperson or the decision maker for my younger brother and me, and
mm-hmm.
I think also with the fact that she is more distant geographically mm-hmm. from where I grew up than I am, or than where my brother is, and I think it may have had something to do with the fact that that she was the only daughter of four children, and mm-hmm. on one side of the family she was also the only granddaughter as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of those things come into play here.
So she took up the mantle of sort of the sibling in charge after your brother's death.
Yes, and even more so after my parents' passing. And
right.
I don't want to get too Freudian here, but don't the youngest children always think the older children are getting the better cut of the pie?
Well, I've thought about that myself. I've thought about a number of times that had my older brother lived, and when we went through the loss of my father and then my mother 3 years after that, that maybe he would have been, you know, a more effective and reasonable patriarch or spokesperson, however one might want to put it.
Protector, maybe even.
Exactly.
Yeah. Donald, thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to finish with this email that we got from Carla Johansson in Sacramento, California. I'm 43 years old and have had all three of my brothers die, one of leukemia when I was six,
right.
One committed suicide when I was 13, my last brother dying the day before Thanksgiving last year of lung cancer.
So
I now only have my 90-year-old grandfather and my mother left as family. I have two issues that I think are important. One is that the worst thing is the thought that soon I will have no one left who holds family memories to help identify who is who in snapshots, to remember me as a little girl, to share what Christmas should be. The other issue is that the Family and Medical Leave Act does not cover siblings, and so I had to risk my job in order to be with my brother as he was dying in hospice.
Wow. That's a sad story.
It's a book filled with sad stories, but also filled with people like yourself figuring things out and making recoveries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's going back to your caller or your email. I think one of the primary roles of siblings that we see them playing, especially in adulthood, is the keeper of our stories and the ones we check stories with and who remember our histories with us. So I understand what your caller is or you're saying about feeling that void in her life. And you know, in terms of the Family and Medical Leave Act, siblings are left out in so many different arenas. You know, in the foster care system, siblings are regularly separated because they're not considered important relationships. You know, it's just in so many different arenas. So the siblings of people with chronic illnesses are often there, a dire shortage of services for them because it's just not been considered an important relationship historically. So there are just many gaps in the ways that we've approached siblings and what their needs are in relation to one another.
Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn's book is The Empty Room, Surviving the Loss of a Brother or Sister at Any Age, and she joined us from our bureau in New York.